Welcome to the Ancestral Healing Summit, a free online event where you'll learn from top experts about connecting with your ancestors to heal your lineages and transform your life. Share this powerful program with your friends and family, and come join us on Facebook at The Shift Network. And now your host, Lisa Bonis.
Welcome to this session of the Ancestral Healing Summit with my guest, Greg Braden. Our topic for this session is Human DNA and Ancestral Healing. Greg Braden is a 5-time New York Times bestselling author and is internationally renowned as a pioneer in bridging science, spirituality, and human potential. For over 10 years, Greg worked for Fortune 500 companies as a problem solver during times of crisis, and since then, his research has led to 12 award-winning books published in over 40 languages. The Watkins Journal lists Greg among the top 100 of the world's most spiritually influential living people for the 5th consecutive year, and he's a 2018 nominee for the prestigious Templeton Award, established to honor outstanding individuals who've devoted their talents to expanding our vision of human purpose and ultimate reality. Greg, thank you so much for joining us today. Welcome.
Lisa, I am thrilled to be here. Thank you. Thank you first for the invitation to be part of the summit. I think it's a really important summit. It's a topic you don't often hear discussed typically in the circles that we're discussing and sharing this information with now. And I don't know precisely where we're going to go with this. I'm going to follow your lead. And I'm really, really excited to see where we go with the potentials of ancestral healing and what it means in our lives. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we're just going to kind of go with the flow here, because with the summit, we're sort of going from science to shamanism to psychic phenomenon. We're all over the place here. So anywhere you can jump in there would be fantastic. But I know that you do sort of specialize in the field of DNA, epigenetics, et cetera. In fact, your most recent book, Human by Design, talks a lot about human DNA and that it's not what we've been taught. In fact, we're more than we ever imagined. So who are we?
Wow. So we're going to start with the easy questions first.
Sure. Let's dive right
we?
In.
Who are we? Well, the new book, thank you for mentioning it, it's the title is called Human by Design, and it is essentially two books in one. The first half of the book is the new science, Lisa, and it's so new that this information is not being shared in mainstream media. It's not being shared in mainstream classrooms or textbooks or cable television documentaries on the one hand. On the other hand, it helps us to think differently about ourselves and our relationship to our bodies, perhaps most importantly, our relationship to what's happening in our lives and what's happening in our world. So I think where that book begins may be the entry point into what we're talking about today. We are steeped in a story of who we are, our origins, our potential, our capabilities. There is an American author, his name is Scott Turow. And I love what he says about our stories. He says, who are we but the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves and then believe? So we are steeped in a story as individuals, as families, as communities, as a society that we have embraced. We believe the story. It's based on Darwin's idea of evolution, that we are the product of random processes of DNA, random genetic mutations, what some people call just a fluke of biology that just happened to occur a long time ago. And the problem is the new science no longer supports that story on the one hand, and on the other hand, it is still the story that is being taught in our classrooms and through our textbooks and perpetrated through the mainstream media. So the first half of the new book shares the science, and I'll share some of that science here in just a moment, that tells us that story is not true. But I want to preface this. I'm a scientist. I'm a degreed geologist. I worked as a scientist in the corporations, as you mentioned in the introduction, before I began speaking directly to a mainstream audience rather than going through the traditional avenues to share this information. And what I'm about to say to you flies 180 degrees in the face of everything that I was taught and conditioned to believe through my academic training. On the one hand, And on the other hand, it's what the science is telling us. And I think this is important. The language of science is a relatively neutral language. I mean, we could share this story in the language of spirituality. We could share it in the language of alchemy and the language of shamanism. And those languages, sometimes they mean different things to different people. And I've found that science does not have all the answers. But science is a relatively neutral language when it comes to sharing big ideas. So I'm going to share what the new discoveries are now telling us. These are big ideas based upon peer-reviewed science. So these aren't my theories or my hypotheses, or, you know, I didn't channel this from, you know, from a higher dimension, although all those are valid ways of learning. So the bottom line is this: we modern humans, we showed up on Earth 200,000 years ago. And scientists do agree with that. There's very little controversy about the timing. We don't know where we came from. We have been led to believe a story that there's an evolutionary path leading to our existence. The problem is, in the last few years, 7, 8, 10 years, the technology now allows us to do today in science what we used to call science fiction, Lisa. And this is so fascinating to me. So, for example, I want to share this, but I want to do it non-technically. So I know that most of our viewers are probably familiar with the movie Jurassic Park. And in the movie Jurassic Park, scientists were able to extract the DNA from the fossilized remains of these ancient forms of life. And in the movie, they brought them back to life. To the best of my knowledge, we haven't gone quite that far yet. But what we are now able to do is scientists can extract the DNA from ancient fossilized forms of life, including the fossilized forms that we were told are our ancestors, the forms of life that we're told we descended from. And this is where the problems really began. Because number one, what the DNA is telling us is that what we thought were our ancestors, we did not descend from Neanderthal, for example. They're showing that we actually shared the earth with Neanderthal, that we interbred with them. They said we had Neanderthal boyfriends and girlfriends, which is why if we do, you know, an ancestry.com or 23andMe and we have our DNA checked, people will say, you know, I've got some Neanderthal DNA because there was some interbreeding in the past. But we shared the earth with them. We could not have descended from them. What the DNA is also showing is that we, is what are called anatomically modern humans, we showed up 200,000 years ago, just as we are today physically, and we've not changed in those 200,000 years. Now, I believe that we have changed in consciousness. I think there's been an evolution in consciousness and awareness. But physically, if you take a body of an anatomically modern human from the past and you compare that human to us today, the same body proportions, same cranial proportions, the same DNA, the same nervous system, and all this is important because when we showed up 200,000 years ago, we were fully enabled, fully capacitated, fully wired for extraordinary potentials that we are only beginning to understand. Extraordinary potentials that we have been led to believe only exist through adepts and yogis and mystics and monks and nuns and shamans living, you know, far away from mainstream civilization, high on the mountaintop or in a monastery somewhere. And what we now know is that those people are demonstrating capabilities we call extraordinary. I personally believe that they are ordinary and that we simply have forgotten how to embrace them in our everyday lives. Now, the story that we're talking about, this story of human evolution, I just want to be very clear. As a scientist, evolution is a fact, and I have seen it in the fossil record. I've seen it for plants, animals, marine life. I've seen it for insects. I've seen it in primates. The story breaks down when it comes to humans. Something happened 200,000 years ago. We don't know precisely what it is. And where the technology is now, it's allowing us to work backwards. Lisa, we can take the DNA that we have today, and we're able to work backward to see what needed to occur to give us the DNA that we have today. And this is what's blowing the minds of the scientists. Because what we're finding are chromosome fusions. We're finding genetic modifications that cannot be attributed to natural processes. And they did not happen slowly, gradually over a long period of time. They happened all at once. They happened 200,000 years ago. The Max Planck Institute is telling us that. Our research scientists here in the States are telling us this. So it's opened the door to what is called forbidden territory for scientists, because it appears that the DNA that makes us who we are, that gives us our humanness, that makes it possible for us to have empathy and sympathy and compassion and to self-regulate our biology. And this is where we're going to go in this conversation, the self-regulation of our biology. The DNA that makes that possible, it appears that it is formed with intent. And that word is like a shockwave that reverberates throughout the scientific community, anthropology, biology, genealogy, all of these things. When you use the word intent implies purpose. And science, as it is today, is not equipped to deal with where the evidence is leading. And for that reason, they tend to shy away from it. And you're not seeing this information. It is peer reviewed. So it's in technical journals, but you're not seeing it in what I call the pop science, the scientists that you see on mainstream cable television. They bring as experts, or in the shiny magazines and the airport newsstands. This is hardcore science that changes the way we think about ourselves, our relationship to our past, our relationship to our own bodies and our future. So where we're going with this is, in the first part of the book, identifies the science. The second part gives us the techniques and the applications for how we can actually access and apply these internal technologies to self-regulate our immune system and our longevity, to literally change the genetic patterns within our bodies. And it's opened the door to a couple of new terms that I'd like to introduce early on in our conversation. I think most of our viewers are familiar with the term neuroplasticity. It means that the neurons in the brain are malleable. The way that the connections that are made are malleable. I want to be very clear. The connections are malleable. They're not fixed. They're not set in stone. That word now is applying. We're now talking about bioplasticity. We're talking about genetic plasticity. And the ability for our biology and our DNA to be changed in the way that it expresses through our bodies. The change is determined through the choices that we make, and this is where the self-regulation comes in. We are born with the ability to take the genetic program, if you will, that we have when we come from a mother's womb. We all have what I call the presets. They're like the default settings from the factory, from the factory of wherever we come from. These are the default settings, and they're enough to get us going in life. They help us to deal on a basic level with survival, with some semblance of human relationships, some semblance of intimacy, some semblance of a sense of purpose. And if we never go beyond that, we have the basics we need to get by, just to get by in life. And I want to be very clear, there's nothing wrong with that, and I'm not judging that. However, we also now know that we have the ability to take those basics and we can upgrade those capacities and those potentials in ways that we have never been told in our modern mainstream ways of thinking.
So let's go ahead and get a little more specific then. Our DNA is not written in stone, even though we've all been taught that what we inherit from our ancestors, whether it's a tendency towards certain diseases or mental illnesses, even personality traits, PTSD, anxiety, we've been taught that that's what we're sort of stuck with because that's in our DNA. And your work says otherwise, that we're born with the capacity to self-regulate healing and to experience deep intuition and more on demand. So in other words, we're not at the mercy of our ancestors' legacies. And I wonder if you could speak to that specifically.
Well, I would love to. I just had a recent experience with this. I go, this is January of 2019. Every January I go for an annual physical, just as a baseline to see what's happening in my body and if there's anything that, needs my attention or that I need to address. And every year, even though it's only a year later, they give me the same form to fill out. and the form asked me for a family history. I think many of our viewers know I come from a very dysfunctional, alcoholic, abusive family. My father was the alcoholic and the abuser. My mom, my younger brother, and I got the bad end of that deal, and my father left our family when I was 10. And my father died at an early age, largely I attribute because of lifestyle, choices of lifestyle. So when I'm filling out my medical form, one of the questions is, for your mother and your father, have any of these diseases shown up in your parents? And I just have to go through and I have to check, you know, heart condition, cancer again, diabetes, asthma, hypertension, high blood pressure. I have to say yes, because it's true. My father had these things, but I always make a note on the side and I say attributed to lifestyle. And my doctor always says, what the hell does that mean? You know, why are you telling me that? And I said, just because my father had these characteristics does not mean that I'm going to experience these characteristics. Epigenetics tells us that. And epigenetics is, for some people, it's a relatively new term, but I have to tell you, and I know on Shift programs, my dear friend, my spiritual brother, Dr. Bruce Lipton, was working with epigenetics in the late 1960s. He was doing some of the first peer-reviewed studies that identical cells will express in different ways when they are placed in different environments. And that's what epigenetics is all about. We are a collection of those cells. If you put us in an alcoholic environment with the stress of an alcoholic environment and a poor diet and a lot of tobacco and nicotine and all the things that go with that, it's not unreasonable to expect the DNA to respond through disease the way that it did. In my life, just because I have the same genetic makeup, the choices that I've made in my life, and I'm not saying I've got it all figured out. I'm a student and I'm still learning. But what I've come to understand is to the degree that I can honor my body is not going to express the disease that my father expressed through his choices and lifestyle. And that's why I say that to my doctor. And then he writes some notes and he says, okay. So because it's not common knowledge, this isn't something, even though it's peer-reviewed science, it's not something that typically has in the past been taught at the university level. My friend Bruce Lipton, if you know his story, this is why he left the university, because what he was discovering in the laboratory did not match what he's being asked to teach the students in the classroom who are about to become medical doctors. So it was that conflict that led him to leave that environment and to speak directly to a mainstream audience. And so the term epigenetics, while we in our circles, it's becoming more common today, it actually is a term that was an idea that was coined and that emerged in the late 1960s. So what it tells us when we talk about ancestral healing, we can be talking about physical healing. We can be talking about emotional healing. We can be talking about a combination of a lot of these things. We can be talking on the DNA level. We can also be talking on a cellular level. So I've laid the foundation for why DNA can change. When we come from a family, and I use myself as an example. When I come from a family, there was a lot of stress in our family, a lot of criticism by the abuser, and I know a lot of our listeners are very familiar with this. The criticism can be interpreted in ways that are fearful, that create very low self-esteem, that create perspectives of the world based in fear. So I have a younger brother. We come from the same environment. If he were on this program with me, you wouldn't know that we are even related. We look different. Our bodies are built different. We think differently. And while we both were in the same unhealthy environment, we interpreted that environment in very, very different ways. And for my younger brother, if he were listening, I'm not saying anything I wouldn't say if he were here. His experience in those early years influenced his self-perspective. So the fear, the self-esteem, depression as a result from that, and a lot of things that go with that, those are the results of his perceptions of his environment. I came from the same environment, and I was very blessed, Lisa, with something that I call a strong soul compass. So a lot of the things I was told about myself, when I looked at myself, they didn't make sense. So I didn't believe them. I didn't accept the things that my brother did. Our bodies now are expressing very differently in our later years. I'm now in my mid-60s. So our bodies are expressing very, very differently because our perceptions have triggered those changes at a genetic level that have created very different paths of immune response, of hormonal balance. And these are all part of what ancestral healing is all about. You can come from an unhealthy background, and it's true that you may be predisposed to the health conditions of your parents. If you do nothing differently in your life than what they did in their lives, if you have the same diet, if you have the same belief systems, if you have the same fears, if you have the same criticisms and the same levels of self-esteem, those perceptions are going to trigger chemical changes. And this is where I'm going with this, in the body. And because you have that genetic makeup, it's very possible that your DNA may express through the same health conditions. It doesn't have to, because the epigenetics tells us when we take responsibility for our lives in this moment. And what that means is we do not have to be defined by the conditions that we come from. This is a conversation I have with my younger brother all the time. We have very, very different views on this, as I mentioned. From my perspective, our history brought us to the point that it worked well enough to bring us to the point where we are now. So we can't say it didn't work. And we do not have to have our future defined by the conditions of our past. We may, if we choose to be a victim. But this is where our greatest levels of mastery come from, as we become aware of the potential that we have for this genetic plasticity, as we begin to shift our perspectives. And, you know, maybe you were told in your life that you weren't smart enough to be a mathematician. But you find that all of a sudden, you know, you can sit down and you can look at a math problem, and you know that you can solve that problem in your mind faster than your neighbor can on a calculator. And you say, well, you know, what I heard isn't true. It's not true. And if you can be honest with yourself about these things. So this is where the self-help movement can, in some circumstances, enlighten us to our perspective. The caution is the self-help techniques. We don't want those to become crutches. If they can become a tool that leads us to a deeper level of awareness, that's awesome. If they become a crutch and we replace our fear and our low self-esteem with, you know, the fear of not having our, you know, self-help tools, then we've just replaced one fear with another. So this is where perception changes, can change the chemistry and the DNA in the body. I want to take this another step further, and then let me wrap it together, and then see where we want to go with this. Is that okay, Lisa, if we do it that way?
Beautiful. Yes. Go for it.
I had the honor and the privilege an author through the publisher Hay House of knowing a woman who passed in the year 2013, a brilliant Harvard-trained medical doctor. Her name was Dr. Candace Pert. And I know many of our viewers are familiar with her work. She is noted for a number of reasons, but perhaps the most powerful contribution that she left to us today is she wrote a book entitled Molecules of Emotion. And she was the first to identify that the emotions that we have in our bodies have chemical equivalents. Every emotion we have has a chemical equivalent called the neuropeptide. Right there, I mean, the name tells you exactly what's going on. Neuro related to neurofunctions, and peptides are the way that they're bonding chemically in the body. So what Candace Pert said to us, and this is so powerful, is that every emotion will create a neuropeptide, okay? Even our greatest joys and our heights of ecstasy will create the neuropeptides. We rarely find ourselves stuck in the throes of joy. You just don't hear people say, my God, you know, I've got so much joy in my life. Can I dial it down a little bit? Joy typically is not a problem. So we don't even go there typically. The other end of the spectrum is trauma. And we all have trauma in our lives. Some we're aware of, some we're not. Some is conscious, some is subconscious. And if you are a viewer, if you watch me right now and you come from an alcoholic family, I promise you, you have experienced trauma in some way that you may or may not be familiar with. Well, here's what Candace tells us. This is so interesting. If we are conscious enough to resolve the trauma when it occurs, then the chemical, the neuropeptide, is metabolized out of our bodies through, you know, typical processes, through urine, perspiration, saliva, breath. And that trauma is no longer a problem. However, if we do not have the tools to resolve the trauma, our body does something really, really interesting. Our body will store that chemical in the tissue of a specific organ, and it will hold that chemical, that neuropeptide, it'll hold it in the tissue. It thinks it's doing us a favor. Our body thinks it's helping us. It says, oh, I'm going to channel our bodies now. Our bodies say, okay, here's a trauma. I'm only 3 years old. I don't have the tools to deal with this trauma. So I'm going to store the chemical of this trauma in an organ until I have the ability to come back and heal that trauma. So I'm not saying we do this consciously. This is something our bodies do naturally. And what happens is typically we forget about it because we've stored it as a survival mechanism in the moment. We might forget about it until we're in our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, on up. We don't outgrow these things. And at some point, if that trauma has not been resolved in some way, then it's not uncommon for the tissue to let you know or to let us know that that trauma needs to be addressed. And we will call that disease. Now, this is a very different way of thinking about disease. This is not what a medical doctor will tell you. So a medical doctor will tell you if there's a disease in the tissue, you either bombard it with a chemical or you take the tissue away. This way of thinking, and I'm not saying it's right, wrong, good, or bad. It's a very personal choice. But we have alternatives. This way of thinking tells us that the tissue is lighting up, asking for our attention. And what Candace Pert tells us as a Harvard-trained medical MD, that the resolution of the trauma is what frees that chemical to move through the bloodstream and be metabolized through the body. This is what we call healing. So ultimately, what is the healing of the disease in the body? It is the freeing of a neuropeptide, allowing it to move freely through the blood and to be metabolized because it is now free from that tissue. The way that we arrive at that place, how do we heal those neuropeptides? There's all kinds of ways to do it. One of the ways is through accessing what is called heart-brain coherence and looking at the experience that led to that neuropeptide being created from a non-polarized view. And I'll talk about that in just a minute, but that's one way. Another way is to oxygenate the body. And there are techniques of breath work that seem very benign. And I'm amazed when people, they begin using very specific rhythmic breathing techniques and they'll say, what's the big deal? Nothing's happening. And all of a sudden, these waves of emotion and the images of the trauma come up for them and they say, my God, what's happening? And the trauma doesn't know the difference between the experience happening a minute ago and happening 60 years ago because it's been waiting. It's been waiting for this healing. So when we talk about ancestral healing, this is another factor, not just on the DNA level, but it's the chemicals that we store in our bodies. And the way the belief systems of the trauma can perpetuate those chemicals being stored. Let me give you a perfect example. I had a really good friend of mine, there's a woman in my life, a dear friend, whose father told me that he would die at the age of 75. He was perfectly healthy. And I said, well, how do you know that? He said, well, my father died at the age of 75. My uncle died at the age of 75. And his father, my grandfather, died at the age of 75. He said, the men in our lives, that's when they die. And I said, well, how do you feel about that? And he said, in a way, it is a relief because I can divide my life into three segments of 25 years. The first 25 years, I get to explore. The second 25, I build the business, create the family. The third 25, reap the benefits of my life. His 75th birthday was perfectly healthy. He had a family gathering. Everyone came to celebrate his 75th birthday. 2 weeks later, he was dead. If we don't know who we are, we don't have a rock solid anchor, an emotional and a spiritual anchor to know who we are in this world, then we become vulnerable to the opinions and the perceptions of those that are closest to us, those that we share our lives with, including the church, including academia, university, all of these things. Once we embrace, no matter what's happening in our lives, once we embrace the deepest truths of our existence, how we originated, we're not an accident of biology. There's an intentionality underlying our existence. We are wired to thrive in times of extremes, and we are bioelastic. That means that we are not locked in to the biology that helped us to begin life in this world from our parents. It served us, but we build upon that to become something more than we were when we arrived, if we choose. This, Lisa, is where we find our greatest levels of mastery. And this is what true ancestral healing is all about. This is why it's possible in one generation to heal the alcoholic hurt, for example, or the addiction, the beliefs that have led to these things, so that there need not be a fear of passing it to our children, because it ends with us, because we had the wisdom, we had the will, and we had the capability to transcend, not just heal, but become greater than the hurts that face us in life. We're not defined by our circumstances. And I think that is the power of ancestral healing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. That is so much to think about. And my head will be reeling for days. But I wanted to ask, you say that there's a reluctance and even a resistance to sharing this information. Why?
Well, that could be a whole conference unto itself. What I'll tell you is, I'll begin the answer by simply saying that there's a battle playing out. We are all witnessing the battle, even if we're not aware of it, in the mainstream. And it is a battle to cling at all costs to what is called the standard model when it comes to the thinking of who we are, where we come from, and what our potential is. It's a battle that is being played out in the corporations. It's being played out by the church. It's being played out in academia, in the pharmaceutical industry. There are people who have and entities that have a vested interest in perpetuating a story of powerlessness, helplessness, and the lack of value in human life. There are people and entities that benefit from that. So when you're asking me why, I can answer it in four words. It's money, power, ego, and habit are the four words. And money, power, ego, and habit are reflected in the entities that I'm talking about. Corporations, including pharmaceutical industry.
It makes beautiful sense. In fact, it seems that the word victim has come up more than once in this conversation. It's basically that when we feel that we are victims, we continue illnesses, things that have been passed down to us, and those who would like us to remain victims are the ones who are profiting from this.
Well, this is where the standard model comes in. So I'm going to back up now to a bigger picture of what we're talking about. Our viewers know the world is changing. My world is changing. Your world is changing. Our world is changing in ways we're not used to, faster than we've been prepared to accept. If we don't know who we are, if we don't have the emotional anchor, And that rock solid spiritual anchor that tells us who we are in this world, those external changes can be very damaging. So we are what are called self-referencing beings. We are conditioned to place our sense of well-being upon the events of the external world. So when the government looks like, appears that it's functioning, whether it is or not behind the scenes, when it looks like it's functioning, when financial industries look like everything is, you know, is moving along pretty well, when, you know, jobs seem steady, when relationships seem steady, when everything seems good, then we say, you know, I'm okay. But it's when those things, as self-referencing beings, when those things begin to change, what we are saying subconsciously is, what does that change mean to me? That part of my world that I have come to rely upon, the stability of that part of the world is changing. What does that mean to me? If we don't have the answer, a perfect example are young people. Young people in school today are vulnerable to the perceptions of their peers through social media. If a young person in school today does not have that rock solid anchor, the emotional anchor that tells them who they are, and this is instilled in them through their families. If a young person does not have that anchor emotionally or even spiritually, then when their peers begin to ridicule them and criticize them, if they don't have the anchor to know any different, their self-esteem hinges upon their external environment and that of their peers. They don't know who they are. They'll begin to believe what the social media is saying, and it's happening to a degree that we have young people taking their lives because they believe what their peers have said when they said, you're not worth being in this world. I mean, that is an example of how powerful this conversation is. Some people say, you know, isn't this just a philosophical conversation? There is philosophy involved, but this goes right to the core of what's happening in our lives, every day of our lives. We are living in a world that's globalizing. And that means 8 billion people are being mushed together across barriers, across cultural barriers and religious barriers, and the way that women think about men and the way men think about women. And all of that is generational. So the generational hurts of our ancestors are lighting up because we are being pushed together and we're being asked to interpret the new religions coming in, not new, but religions we're not familiar with, through the eyes of our ancestral hurts. We're being asked to interpret sexuality and transsexuality through the eyes of another generation. And these are all perceptions. And when we look at the deep hurts, the hate based upon the color of our skin or sexual orientation or our religious views, or we see the atrocities in the battlefields halfway around the world as a result of these perceptions, or we see the cyberbullying, or we see the self-destruction of the drug epidemics, the heroin, the methamphetamine, the fentanyl, not just in America, it's happening all over the world. As different as these are from one another, the common theme, they're all tied together through one central theme. They're only possible because of the way we've been taught to think. And that thinking is generational, it's ancestral. And it shows up not only in our bodies, not only in the disease, not only at the DNA level, it shows up socially in the way that we're able to embrace change. So we can pass laws that make it illegal to hate. You know, Obama did that 09, the Hate Crimes Prevention Act 09. It's a beautiful law. It's not going to stop the hate because it doesn't change the way we feel. It simply makes it illegal to exercise that hate. UN 1948 passed, they had to coin the term for the level of killing that was happening. It was called genocide. They had to make the word so they could make that level of killing illegal. And you can make genocide illegal, but we know it hasn't stopped the genocide. So ultimately, what we're talking about here, and the reason this conversation is so important, if we're going to do more than put a temporary bandage on the deepest hurts of our society and between nations, we've got to go to the core of the hurt, and it's in the way we've been taught to think. This is where the new discoveries, I believe, may hold the greatest potential and the most unifying potential, as they begin telling us there's something very special about human life, and it is very precious and very sacred, We are not the product of random genetic mutations that happened through some accident a long time ago. And I think this is this level of thinking. If we're ultimately going to heal the hate, we've got to instill this into our young people. And this is what we're talking about now, is young people become aware of this extraordinary potential that I believe is ordinary, and their ability to self-regulate, deep intuition, their immune system, to become very resilient to the changes they have in their lives, their longevity enzymes, to wake those up, and to know that there's much more to life than what mainstream media is leading them to believe. The diversions, what mainstream media is leading them to believe, that's where the change really happens, Lisa. And I think ultimately this is what this conversation, where it ultimately has to go.
Absolutely. So beautifully put. Before we go any further, as you mentioned, we're getting short on time here. I want to make sure that I give your web address, which is gregbraden.com. For those of you who don't know, Greg is spelled G-R-E-G-G.
That means two G's means it's not a Gregory. My mother did that intentionally. One G is typically short for Gregory. Two G's is a plain old Greg. So I'm just a plain old Greg, gregbraden.com. Thank you for mentioning that.
Plain old Greg. Well, we're almost at the end of our time together, plain old Greg. But before we wrap it up, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to make sure? Because you've said some marvelous things. Do you have anything left?
You know, first I want to thank you, Lisa, for the opportunity. I have not seen the other interviews. I don't know. I pray that this conversation supports the message of this series. And I don't know precisely how it fits, but I'm sharing what I've come to understand about who we are and our ability to change our circumstances and not be defined by the generations of the past. And I fully acknowledge that for many people, it's a way different way of thinking. It's a very different way of thinking, very different from what I was taught. You typically won't see this in mainstream classrooms or textbooks. So what that means is that it takes work to embrace some of these new understandings. And I want to say a little bit about work. My father left when I was 10, our family was ripped apart. It was very traumatic for all of us. We were in low-income housing, you know, and it's just a mess. And my mother gave me a book when my father left. And that book, I know many of our viewers are probably familiar with it. It was written by a 20th century prophet. His name was Khalil Gibran. And the title of the book was called The Prophet. And each chapter was a contemplative chapter. One idea with maybe a page or a page and a half to think about. And there was a chapter on work. And what I read when I was 10 years old touched me so deeply, became a cornerstone to this very day. What Khalil Gibran said to us is, work is love made visible. Work is love made visible. So when we think about the amount of work that it takes to change the way we think, the amount of work that it takes to change the way that we live and to examine our perspectives, the question is, are we worth it? And this is a question we each must ask ourselves. Am I worth the work that it takes to embrace the deepest truths of my existence? And the life we leave for our children is going to be the answer to our question. But I'm going to invite our viewers, if you've never thought about it from that perspective, work, love made visible. If you think about that for every task and every day, it'll change your life. So thank you so much, Lisa. I appreciate the opportunity to share that.
Thank you again, Greg Braden. And thank you to all of our viewers for joining us. I hope you enjoyed this session in the Ancestral Healing Summit.
Thank you for joining the Ancestral Healing Summit, brought to you by the Shift Network. To learn more, visit ancestralhealingsummit.com. To learn more about our global programs to support you in waking up in all the areas of your life and taking inspired action, visit theshiftnetwork.com. Thank you again for joining us and for sharing this empowering path of healing your lineages with your friends and family.